Blog Talk Radio.
Episode of the Hot Wash. This is your host CJ and the lovely Alex Maltizo. How are you doing,
Hello.
Alex?
I am fantastic. I'm really excited for today's show. This is the first time we've had a Gold Star Father on the radio show.
I couldn't be more excited to have our Gold Star Father, Dr. Jeff Falco, tonight. And obviously, it's been a long time since we've been on the air. I think it's probably June of last year was the last time we did an episode. And working out some kinks with Blog Talk Radio tonight. So I apologize for maybe the sound quality. I had to call in on my cell phone and get it going that way because the software is not working. But we're going to make it happen nonetheless. So Dr. Falco, are you here with us?
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much for having me. It's truly an honor.
It's our honor.
Definitely an honor to have Dr. Falkel with us tonight. For those of you who maybe have never listened to the Hot Wash before, or this is the first time in a long time that you're listening, I'll set a couple of ground rules and let you know what we're all about. The Hot Wash is part of Warfighter Outreach Radio Network. We're all about reaching out to our brothers and veterans, our brothers and sister veterans, and letting them know that there is life after the military. There's life after combat, and that you can be a full-functioning member of society despite what you've been through in the past and the struggles you've been through with in war, and that you can come back to your family, have a good family relationship, and be a successful person, a successful person of humanity, in humanity, and contribute to the community, and getting rid of the stigma that all soldiers who have PTSD are damaged goods. That's kind of what we stand for and what we're about. We definitely always look for fellow veterans, patriots, and those who support veterans to come on and be guests on our show. And tonight I couldn't think of a better way to start this season off than having a Gold Star father with us who knows definitely very intimately the sacrifice of supporting our freedom and our way of life. Give me just a second. I think I've been talking too much today. I'm losing my voice. America's greatest commodity is our sons and our daughters. Regardless of all the gold, regardless of all the riches, and the money that America might have, and the businesses that we triumph in, without our most precious commodity, which is our sons and our daughters, we have nothing. Our sons and our daughters have paid for our freedom in the United States, and they've given us our way of life, given us the freedom of speech, freedom of religion, the freedom to go about our daily lives. And if it weren't for these young men and women who sacrificed their life daily, we would not be able to so eloquently live the lives that we live. So I can't think of a more fitting way than to start off our season with Dr. Jeff Falkel, who has given his most precious commodity, which was his son, Staff Sergeant Chris Falkel. So, Dr. Falkel, I definitely want to say thank you for coming on the show and being a guest tonight.
Thank you, CJ. It's as I said earlier, it was truly an honor, and your words ring very true. It's we are very fortunate that there are men and women like yourself that will put on a uniform and go out there and defend the rights and the freedoms that we sometimes take for granted as Americans. I know I will never take that freedom for granted ever again.
And you served in the military prior, so you're a retired veteran yourself.
Yes, ma'am.
So to lose your son, could you tell us about Chris?
Absolutely. Chris was born in September 24th, 1982, and in Massachusetts. We lived there for 2 years, moved to Ohio for 6 years, and then moved out here to Colorado when Chris was about 8 years old. And pretty much as soon as we got out here, he put a Special Forces long tab, an airborne tab, and a Special Forces arrowhead on the wall above his bed. And as an eight-year-old, he knew what he wanted to do when he grew up. And I was very fortunate and blessed to be able to help him on his journey. We would spend countless hours training, doing all different kinds of, land navigation and tracking and distance estimation. I have a part-time job out at a golf course, and we would go out there at night and be able to figure out distances, very accurately based on the markers on the fairway. And so it was one of the joys of my life to be able to prepare my son and to train with my son in his effort to become a member of the United States Army Special Forces. He went into the Army right after September 11th. went through the basic training at Fort Benning, went to jump school there, went up to Fort Bragg for selection in May of 2002, was selected on his first trial, and went through the Q course, graduating as a weapons sergeant in February of 2004. Left within 6 days of graduating from SEER school, and was in Afghanistan on ODA 316. He was a member of 1st Battalion, 3rd Special Forces Group. And no sooner did he get to Afghanistan, but the senior Bravo on his team, the senior weapons sergeant, had to come back to the States for a family emergency. So even though Chris was basically 6 days out of the Q course, he became the senior weapons sergeant. Well, everybody decided that they weren't going to let that get to his head, so they started calling him Junior, and that was the name that stuck. So he was in Afghanistan from February of 2004 until June of 2004. Came back to the States, back to Fort Bragg, and his sergeant major knew, and his team sergeant knew, that Chris needed to be in as many schools as possible, because if he wasn't doing something, he was going to get in trouble. So they pretty much put him in almost every high-value school that there is within the Special Forces. He was the honor graduate.
What was his
favorite? His favorite was the sniper school. And, in fact, he wanted to be a sniper ever since he was little. His high school graduation present, we built a sniper rifle together. And he was good. He was a phenomenal shot. Was actually the honor graduate of his SOTA class. And right after he graduated from Special Forces Sniper School, got on a plane and flew out to Utah. And I drove over from Colorado. We went skiing together because he was going to get ready to go back to Afghanistan in June of 2005. And so first day we were there, we're on the chairlift, and it's snowing like crazy. In fact, we actually missed getting off the chairlift, which was kind of funny to both of us. And as we're coming back down the hill, he says, you know, Dad, when I get back from Afghanistan, I want to start making pens out of 7.62 shells. And ever since he was a little boy, he would make things out of shell casings, you know, key rings and light poles and different objects. But, you know, he had never made a pen. And I thought that was kind of a cool idea. And so, you know, we talked about it, you know, the rest of that day, and when you get back, we'll work on it. Well, on August 7th, 2005, his team, ODA 316, went out on a mission, and 54 hours later, they got back to their fire base after the famous Battle of Mari Gar. In the middle of that battle, at approximately 19:30 local time, Chris was killed by a sniper, and unfortunately, he was the only member of his team that was that perished. One of his other teammates was injured, but you know, he survived and is doing fine. Prior to that fateful moment, he had saved the lives of his teammates and the 16 members of the Afghan National Army that were with them on several occasions over the course of that 54-hour battle. He was awarded the Silver Star posthumously for his efforts, his valor, and his heroism. And I lost a son, but I gained a family. And his Special Forces family is my family. There are a lot of little kids running around today that would not be here if Chris did not do his job. And he did it as only he could. So I'm very grateful that he was the only one who perished and that he was able to save his teammates, because they've done amazing things, not only for Special Forces, but for our country and for the world subsequently, you know, to that battle. So that was my son.
Yeah. Can you hear me, Jeff?
Yeah.
So I want to touch briefly, and
first and foremost, and I didn't give this disclaimer, and not to take away from what we're talking about, the hot wash is definitely 100% uncensored. It's unfiltered, and I like to call it unadulterated. We will speak our mind, and we will talk about the truth on this episode and on every episode of the Hot Wash. So if those who have tender ears or who might not appreciate strong language or the truth, this might not be the episode or the radio station for you to listen to, because we will definitely tell it 100% uncensored and unadulterated. Listening to your story, Jeff, I tell you, one of my things that I definitely say, and I spoke with you last night on the phone, is, you know, my allergies very rarely kick in. And when they do, boy, they hit me hard. And listening to you talk about your son, Chris, definitely causes me to have a run of allergies. And my eyes definitely water.
Yeah, I have a tendency to do that to a lot of people, including Jack Nicklaus. I had him crying like a baby while died. He was an amazing young man. For only being 22, he did an awful lot. And
I definitely want to. So Chris was 22 when he paid the ultimate sacrifice in price of our freedom for this nation. Correct?
Yes, sir. Yeah. He was an E6. He was a staff sergeant, and he had advanced for the ranks pretty quickly. In fact, he wasn't even in the Army. He wasn't even in the military for 4 years, and yet he was already an E6. Had he lived to October 4th, 2005, that was the date for his E7 board. His sergeant major always used to joke with him that he was going to outrank him before he got out of the Army, and he almost did.
So I definitely, in talking with you last night, I got the chance to talk to you last night for a couple of hours on the phone. Tell me a little bit about where you came from, Jeff, and your upbringing, and then I'm going to hit on some things as far as the way that you raised Chris.
I was raised in upstate New York, country boy. I was lucky. I had a 5,000 acre backyard, and as soon as school was over, I basically lived up on the mountains, taking care of myself and fending for myself. And I can vividly remember telling my mother, well, I'm heading up the hill. When are you coming back? Oh, a couple of weeks. And back in those days, back in the 50s, I wasn't, nobody thought twice about it. Did my undergraduate education at Cortland State. I was actually supposed to be in General Petraeus' class at West Point, but I was in a car accident in December of 69, rather, and so they, I wasn't able to go to West Point. Did my master's in physical therapy at Duke University, and then did my doctoral work in cardiovascular and exercise physiology at the University of Pittsburgh. In 1985, I was able to get into the Army Reserve, worked as a physiologist for 16 years, doing different testing and training and establishing different protocols and looking at equipment and different things for all different, all different units within the military. It was a great job. Was a physical therapist for many years. And in 2007, I figured out Chris's dream of making a pen out of 7.62 casings. And so on what would have been his 25th birthday, 24 September 2007, we started Junior's Bullet Pen Company. Junior was, as I said earlier, what everybody called him. And, continued to work and coached and did a lot of different things. I was very, very fortunate in my professional career to work with athletes of all ages, all abilities, from youth athletes to Olympic athletes to combat athletes. and it was truly a great career, and I'm very fortunate to have had the opportunity to work with so many amazing men and women. But about 2009, I guess, bullet pens started taking off, and it was no longer a hobby. It became and a passion that actually became what I did pretty much full time, and full time a lot of time included 20 hours a day. So since 2007, made close to 400,000 pens. And our initial, when we first started making them, that we started in the world headquarters was our kitchen table. And then 3 years ago, when we started increasing our product line, my Christmas present to my dear wife was moving the world headquarters down to the palatial basement. So that's where, we push pens out every day.
So,
and it's kind of like a therapeutic alone time for you. I remember talking to you about how when you're making these pens, but does it feel, how do you feel about, Chris's presence? Because I know that you, being Lakota, part Lakota, that you have a certain belief system about warriors and where they are, correct? I mean, what's your belief? Can you share that with us?
Yeah, for sure. I was very, very fortunate, and over 4,000 Gold Star families in our country and over 2,000 Gold Star families worldwide have gotten an amazing gift from an angel among us. The name is Mike Reagan, and he lives out in just north of Seattle, and he does amazing, amazing portraits for the fallen families for absolutely no charge. And so right above my workstation, I have Mike's Reagan's portrait of Chris and a copy of it. And I have a copy of one of Chris's other teammates, Chief Warrant Officer 2 Mark Reed, who was killed by, an enemy that nobody saw called cancer. He died of multiple myeloma 2.5 years ago. And I feel their presence, Chris's presence and Marcus's presence with every pen I make. Their spirit is with me. And falcons are very, very important to our family. Our name means a little falcon in Lakota. And I see falcons on a regular basis. And it never fails that when I need help in the head, a falcon will almost always show up, and it's pretty special.
And I know how close you are with your ODA 316 family. Can you tell me how they've helped you heal as well, and how you guys have helped each other as a family?
Absolutely, and I think that's probably the best explanation of it, Alex, is helping each other. Because I lost a son, but they lost a teammate. They lost a brother. But the guys on Chris's team, who had well over 100 years of Special Forces experience combined, they had never lost a teammate. And it was hard. It still is hard on them because, it just is. And part of the problem that they feel is that, it should have been me, or there wasn't anything, there wasn't anything I could do about it. And I've had that frustration. I wasn't there. I wasn't there.
I think that's one of the biggest things Jeff, that fellow teammates and comrades in arms and brothers and sisters, they always feel that survivor's guilt.
Absolutely.
They always feel like, what could I have done to change the course of this action, or what could I have done to prevent this, to preventing this loss of my brother or my sister. But I think one of the things, and I know I definitely believe you're a spiritual man. I believe wholeheartedly, and I've said it many times on the Hot Wash, I don't get too religious, but there's – the man upstairs has a plan. There's a plan for everything. Before we know and before we even have a clue or what we think we know, it's written down in a book, and the man knows when he's going to take us home and when our work on earth is finished. So regardless of how we feel and what we think we might could do to change that, when it all comes down to it, when the man upstairs says it's time to go, it's time to go. And there's nothing that we can do to change that. One of the things that we can take comfort in is knowing that our time on earth is precious, and the difference that we can make in individuals' lives every day until it is our time is what makes the difference. The lives that we touch, the people that we touch, and the things that we do is what makes that difference. And the impact that we have on those who we were blessed to spend our time with, that's what makes a difference. And I can tell you, not just listening to you as Chris's father, but in speaking with other people who knew Chris, knew your son personally, he made that impact on their lives. He was an individual who definitely dynamically owned a room when he walked into it. There was no doubt. Exactly. You know, if he did not have the center, and that's not to say that in a condescending or a demeaning kind of way, but if he didn't have the center of attention, he made sure he had your attention when he walked into a room, because he was going to challenge whoever the alpha male was with him and show them that he was just as good, if not better than they were. And that's what being a warrior is all about.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, to follow up on what you started saying, CJ, you're 100% correct. Is one of the things I tell, you know, people when they ask me about Chris and losing him and whatever, and it's hard. It's tough. But I honestly believe that the survivors, rather than having guilt, we have a gift, and our gift was knowing that person, and we have a solemn duty to let the world know.
And
let the world know what he was all about.
I was actually present when a veteran was walking across the street, and he was in his walker. And this lady who wasn't paying attention, she was on the phone, and she hit the veteran, and he was under the van, and he was holding onto the chassis for at least 20 feet. And to find out later on from the scene of the crime, he had passed. And everybody, you know, will always like to live to longevity, but, you know, Chris already knew what he wanted to do. It was like he prepared himself, you know, for that moment. And to see a veteran get hit at home in all these crazy accidents that happen on the motorcycles and things like that, he was able to die in battle the way a warrior, you know, in Lakota style, as they say, hoka hey, you know, that's the
absolutely
best way that I think that Chris would want to die.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, he always used to say, I'm going to go out in a blaze of glory. And he did. You know, and the things he did in the first 40 some odd hours of that battle are epic. And you know, somebody that's 22 years old is not supposed to know how to do those things, and not supposed to have the talent and the skill and the confidence that he had. And he was an incredibly confident person. You know, he knew what he was going to do, and he knew it was going to be right. And he, you know, if it was wrong, he was wrong. And he knew that, and he would admit it, and he would apologize, but he wasn't wrong very often. In fact, one of the things he used to say to me all the time is, you know, Dad, you know, even a broke watch is right twice a day. And, and that was,
well,
so that was my time to be right.
And you had a conversation, and I think – I don't know if it's father, you know, a parent's intuition, but you have this premonition, this feeling when he called you last. Could you tell us
absolutely
about that?
Yeah,
when he was over in Afghanistan, his first trip, I didn't worry once. There wasn't a single moment. And I understand I was in the military for a long time, and I understand the risks that are involved. But I had absolutely no fear, none, that anything was going to happen to him in his first trip. And the night before he left, they left on Father's Day, 2005. So 20th of June or whatever that is. And he called me up on Saturday night, the night before, because he wasn't going to get to wish me a happy Father's Day on Sunday, because he would be in the air. And he said, now, Dad, I know you don't want to hear about this anyway, and I know you don't want to talk about it, but we got to talk about it, because if something happens, and I'm not saying it's going to, but if something happens, this is what I want you to do. And he just kind of outlined step by step, his wishes. And I said yes to most of them. I disagreed with a couple. for whatever reason, I had this feeling. Before the basement became our ward headquarters of Junior's Bullpen Company, it was my weight room. And I used to come down and train, almost every day. I could be having a great day, and I would come downstairs and I'd start training, and within minutes, I just have this ungodly feeling of something's going to happen to Chris. And it got to the point where I stopped training. I stopped going down in my basement, other than to do the laundry, because every time I did, I just had this incredibly horrible feeling. And we spent a lot of time down in the basement. Chris's younger brother, Tim, they were both great soccer players. And so we had a little, indoor soccer arena, on one side of the basement. We had an indoor shooting range, across the front of the house in the basement. And so we spent a lot of time down here. And I don't think that was it. But what I think was happening, it was him preparing me for what was going to happen. So on the night of August 6th, in Colorado that evening, got a phone call, and I'd actually already gone to bed. And my wife came upstairs and woke me up and said, "Hey, Chris is on the phone." And it was unusual because he always called my cell phone. And back in those days, I was, working, doing a lot of work with strength coaches and athletes around the world. And I was literally traveling all over the world. And I told everybody, I said, "Hey, I'm not turning my cell phone off, because if Chris calls me, I'm taking the phone call." And everybody understood, and it was only two or three times that it happened, but I was not going to miss a phone call from my son. So the night of August 6th, which was August 7th in Afghanistan, Chris called up, and we had a great conversation, 45 minutes or so. But again, he kind of reviewed with me what he wanted me to do if something happened. So that was on the 7th, and one of the things he wanted was the Madden football game, the 2006 Madden football game. So on August 9th, a very, very special day to me now, I was getting ready to take my younger son, Tim, back to the University of Hawaii. So 5 o'clock in the morning, when Walmart opened, I went and picked up this Madden football game for Chris, and threw some pistachio nuts and some other things that he wanted in a care package, and took them to the post office and dropped them off and shipped them to him over in Afghanistan, and then came back to the house. And, 8:40, I told Tim we have to leave for the airport to fly back to Hawaii. I'm literally taking my luggage and Tim's luggage out to the back of my truck when the casualty assistance officer rolled down the street. My reaction to that, and I apologize to the chief, for screaming at him, because they no sooner got up, and he and the chaplain got out of the vehicle and asked if, I said, "Who else is killed?" They didn't answer him. So I said it a little bit louder voice, "Who else was killed?" They didn't answer. And then I start screaming. I'm yelling at him at the top of my lungs. And she finally said, "No one, sir, but we probably should go inside." And I just collapsed right there. And that's how I found out. But I, like you said, Alex, I think Chris was preparing me for this path.
I'm holding your hand. Be strong. Yeah. And one ever wants to, I mean, I don't have children of my own, obviously. CJ has children. No one ever thinks they would ever outlive their children.
Never.
And I know that Chris really loved playing with children. And, I mean,
yeah.
What kind of father do you think he would be today? And what
amazing.
Kind of father has it made of you because of his death?
Better. Much better. I look at things a whole different way. And I am blessed. Go ahead,
brother.
I said earlier, I'm just truly blessed for the family that I have now.
And they're blessed to have you. We're all blessed to have you.
I think one of the things...
Katonke.
One of the things that I definitely want to touch on, Jeff, because you hear so much, and I try to stay away from politics, but Chris's sacrifice to our country and to our freedom, that's not a decision that he took lightly.
No.
That's something that Chris, listening to you and listening to the stories that you told about Chris when we were on the phone, yeah, that's something that Chris knew he wanted to do his entire life.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, we watched the second tower come down together on September 11th. And I looked at him and I looked him square in the eye. I said, because he was in an early entry program into the Army. And I looked him square in the eye. I said, "You're going to war." And he said, "I'm ready, Dad." And in fact, when his very, very first interaction with his first team leader, an amazing man by the name of Major Jim Gant. They had a Chris had literally just got off the plane, and they had somebody triangulated that they were going to go after. And Jim sat Chris down on the hood of his GMV and said, "Chris, you just got off the plane. You haven't even zeroed your weapon. We're going after HVT-1, and Chris tells me later he had no idea what HVT-1 meant. And Jim says to him, he goes, "I'm never going to tell you this again, but if you don't think you're ready, if you don't think you can, hold your weight on in this mission, we'll let you stay in the fire base." And he looked Jim square in the eye and he said, "Sir, I've been waiting my whole life for this." And Jim said, "Well, don't call me sir anymore and go zero your weapon." And, they didn't get to go after him that night, but even the next morning, his teammates knew that they had a warrior. They knew that even though this young, bright-eyed, 20, he was only 20 at the time, 20-year-old junior was a warrior, and he could hold his weight and pull his weight and he did. And he did it the right way.
And I wanted to share with our audience what Stoudemire from Rustic Knives is doing. He actually has a pair of Chris's boots from Afghanistan, and he started this. Boots from people who've had Purple Hearts, and he has 9/11 steel, and he's shaping them into Randall knives, and he is making a special knife with Chris's boots. They're stacking the leather for the handle, but Chris mm-hmm. will actually be a part of that.
Yeah. You said something earlier, CJ, that is, I meant to talk about it then, but it's, Chris was only in the Army for less than 4 years, but it just never ceases to amaze me the people whose lives he's touched. And subsequently have touched my life, and it just every day I almost every day hear somebody else or somebody that interacted with him or knew him or knew of him, and And it's special. It means a lot to me as his dad that that he was so well thought of and you know, for being the character that he was, and he was definitely a character. he did it the right way.
I can tell you that definitely I have nothing but the utmost respect for our Gold Star families. And I can't have a conversation with a Gold Star family member face to face without getting teary eyed.
Allergies.
Yeah, my allergies definitely kick in.
Yeah.
Onions.
Because I've seen the sacrifice, and I've been there when my brothers and sisters have made that sacrifice. And something I wanted to touch on, and briefly mentioned it earlier, was the political aspect. You know, I'm going to touch on something that's hot in the news. It has been in this week. The criticism of our new president, President Trump, of the Navy SEAL operator from SEAL Team 6 who lost his life in Yemen conducting that mission. I can tell you 100% unequivocally, without any mental reservation or hesitation whatsoever, that every single member of the Special Operations and Special Forces community, they're there because they want to be. They're not there because they have to be. Yeah, they follow orders, they're soldiers, but they volunteered. They volunteered to be up front where the fighting is hard. They volunteered to be at the tip of the spear where others might not have the courage to be and fight. And there's no greater honor than for a special operations soldier to lose his life in battle.
Absolutely. And it's not that they volunteered. That's what they needed to do. It was their destiny. You know, it's not something you go into lightly. And in order to even be successful in the special operations community, you have to be prepared. You have to have a special physical preparation, a special mental preparation, special emotional preparation. And it's not something that you can, you know, go to Walmart and pick up for, you know, for $5.95. It's something that comes from your heart. It comes from your soul. It comes from your family. And you're exactly right. I mean, these guys, they know the risks. They've been doing this for a long time. And, you know, for people to criticize the commander in chief who, oh, by the way, made a point to be out there, you know, to greet, to be with his family when his body arrived back in Dover. And I can pretty much guarantee that the previous administrations didn't do that. If they did, it was very, very rare. And, you know, unfortunately, we lost another brother for the weekend. And, you know, I sincerely believe that President Trump will be there when his body arrives back at Dover. So
I believe that 100%. And I'm not here to this isn't the Trump hour. This isn't, you know, a time for me to talk about how great I think President Trump is. Am I impressed with what President Trump has done? Absolutely, 100%. And I can tell you the respect that he has gained from his soldiers by showing up at Plainside to greet the remains of a fallen comrade and a man that he was responsible for speaks volumes of his leadership and of his respect that he has for our men and women in uniform. And I, you know, to quell any rumors or to any questions that there might be out there, I can tell you 100% being involved with the most time-sensitive targets, the most high-value targets that the United States had at times when I was serving in special operations, the ground force commander has the decision to either execute that mission or not execute that mission. And the hogwash of them saying that President Trump sent them in there without proper intelligence, is absolutely ludicrous, because the ground force commander knew he had actionable intel, or he wouldn't have executed that mission.
Exactly.
So the men and women, and I say women because there's women on the front lines that the American people have no clue about, that are fighting. So the men and women and our brothers and sisters in arms, they know the inherent risk that's associated with their job. They're there because they want to be. Let me get a drink so I can stop cracking my voice. You know, I think back to, there's many verses in the Bible, and I swear I'm not trying to preach, but one of the verses that that means a lot to the special operations community is, you know, Isaiah 6:8. And it says, "Also I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send and who will go for us? Then said I, here am I, send me." That scripture rings true in the hearts and minds of every individual who signs up in the special operations community. Now, we talk about special operations a lot on this episode, on this this radio show, and that's not to downplay the service or the decisions that any soldier, airman, sailor, or Marine has made volunteering for service to their nation, because I absolutely respect that. But we're not talking about individuals who signed up to get their college paid for and thought that, oh, I'm going to sign up, get my college paid for, and then I'm not going to have to deploy. I'm going to just do my time and get out. We're talking about guys who knew the inherent risk in the profession that they chose. And the I get a little bit worked up thinking about this too and talking about it. But there's a lot of guys know, you know, I'm a former Night Stalker. And the last stanza in our Night Stalker creed is that I serve with the memory and pride of those who have gone before me, for they love to fight, fought to win, and would rather die than quit. Night Stalkers don't quit. So I look at my brothers like Staff Sergeant Chris Falco, and I know that he died doing what he loved. Did he want to leave
with
his
men,
dad?
With the men he loved. Yeah.
Exactly. Did he want to leave his family? No. None of us want to leave our family. We'd all, you know, love to be at home spending time with our wife and our kids, our girlfriends, brothers, sisters. But if we don't sacrifice, who will? So that's the reason, that's what drives us to do these missions. Jeff, we talked about kind of Chris's history, what drove him to become a soldier and what drove him to become Special Forces and be up front where the fighting was hard. I want to say thank you for being the outstanding example of what a Gold Star father is, because, you know, I've got a lot of friends who are Gold Star family members. And I interact with Gold Star family members at least weekly. And it's, you know, it's their choice. It's their prerogative to deal with the loss of their loved one, how they do. And, you know, I respect that. But I have a greater and a higher respect for Gold Star family members who embrace the history and the service of their lost loved one, and who carry the torch for their lost loved one and give back to the community and set the example for other Gold Star family members and other service members and families of service members. And Jeff, you know, I definitely want to say thank you for doing that and for being such a fine, outstanding Gold Star father, and being so supportive
of
the armed forces.
Yeah.
Thank you, CJ.
Thank you, Alex. It's I tell everybody it's the least I can do, and it's true. You know, I would do more if I could.
And you will.
Yep, absolutely.
Can you tell us about some of the things that you're championing as well? I know
sure.
that you're heavily involved with Task Force Dagger and mm-hmm. and Cantrell's Dancing Angel. Can you tell us about those?
Absolutely, yeah. One of the things that you know, I mean, as Alex had asked earlier a question about, you know, Chris's presence, this is his company, it's not mine. And so I channel and I model things after how I know Chris would have done things. And he was a very giving person, and he loved taking care of people. And so one of the things we decided early on, in fact, day one with the company, is that we would give back to the special operations community that was his family. And so we've donated a lot to in terms of cash and product to different foundations. But the three foundations that I'm working most with now is Task Force Dagger Foundation. And actually, we're going to get Keith David, the executive director of that, on Hot Wash in a couple of weeks. Task Force Dagger is one of the few special operations foundations that supports all of special operations, you know, not mm-hmm. just the operators, but also the support personnel and their families. And there's three main missions of Task Force Dagger. One is immediate need. One is what we call soft initiatives. We're looking to kind of find what's hurting and killing our special operations soldiers, you know, outside of the battlefield, in terms of cancers and lead exposures and different things like that. But the thing I'm most intimately involved with is the recreational therapy aspect, where we find activities that the entire family can participate in. Because as Keith has said many, many times, you know, it's not just the soldier that's wounded, it's the whole family that's wounded. And so we, in fact, Alex is joining the team this year, and we're going out to Key West in June. And we have a, you know, we're called, so I think it's the seventh or eighth dagger dive this year down in Key West. And, you know, we'll get, it's just, you know, every year that I go, my family gets that much bigger. People that I've met and people that I interact with, you know, they're no longer just people, they're family members, and that's how Dagger feels. I'm on the board of directors. It is one of my great honors to be on the board of directors of Dancing Angels Foundation. It was a foundation that Louise Cantrell started in honor of her two beautiful daughters, Natalia and Isabella, who were perished in a house fire with their dad back in 2012. And, you know, the girls love to dance. That was their passion and their love. And so what Louise has done is put together a foundation that will provide scholarship monies to young dancers to allow them to continue to be part of the passion that her daughters had for that amazing activity. We've given out, I can't remember how many scholarships, but quite a few. We actually have a couple of people that are in college now, and part of their college, their dance scholarships will be provided by Dancing Angels Foundation. And then, you know, Special Operations Warrior Foundation, you know, is been around the longest. You know, it was started, you know, to support the children of the eight service members that were killed in Desert One, back in the Iranian desert, back in 87, or what was it? It wasn't 87. When was it? 77. You know, and then the other foundation that I, you know, I help out is, as much as we can, is Mike Reagan, is our Fallen Heroes Project. And like I said earlier, he's an amazing man that draws portraits for free, absolutely at no charge. And so if there's anybody out there that's listening to this, this is my little commercial, who is a Gold Star family or knows a Gold Star family that does not have one of Mike Reagan's portraits, you know, please contact him, or you can contact me. Their website is fallenheroesproject.org, because it's Mike's mission to draw all of them, all of the fallen. And he's also not just fallen military, but he, you know, the five Texas police, Dallas police officers that were killed several months or a year ago. He's done the children that were in Sandy Hook. So he's an amazing giving man, and I'm truly
and
blessed to be able to call
Marine.
Him brother. Yes, he was a combat Marine in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he also won the Civilian Congressional Medal of Honor as well for all his work.
Yeah, last year he was awarded that.
And his goal, I remember, was to make sure that he portrayed all of the fallen. So that is something that he is making a personal mission.
To be able to bring them home to their families. And, you know, Mike's, in fact, when Chris died, you know, that first day, I literally, if the casualty assistance officer had showed up 5 minutes later, they would have missed me because Tim and I would have already been on our way to the airport. We had to deal with everything in terms of funeral arrangements and memorials and things like that. But I still had to get Tim to Hawaii because I needed to get his stuff out of his apartment and get him another place to live. So while we were flying over to Hawaii, and I hadn't slept, you know, a second in 2 days, I asked the flight attendants on the United flight there if I could have some napkins. And I had this compulsion to start writing down stories and writing down memories, almost like I was afraid I was going to forget them. And those 77 napkins that I wrote on, you know, back and forth to from Honolulu to Denver, became the start of the making of Our Warrior, the book that I wrote about Chris with his ODA.
And
hey, Jeff, we're
going to
be cut off in about 30 seconds. We're going to it'll still continue to record, but the live broadcast will be over. So Jeff, can you please real quick, and Alex, I'm going to kick your butt because next time I'm going to overbook for over an hour because I should have known better. We would have talked more than an hour tonight with Jeff.
We have an appointment after this, so this is perfect.
I know about your appointments. It's running like a machine. I know about that. Jeff, real quick.
That's why you're my bestie.
tell us about the programs, Junior Bullet Pins. Tell us about that. Because I carry a Junior Bullet Pin every single day, and I write with every day. It's in my pocket. So
I know, I love
tell
it.
Us about Junior Bullet Pins.
We make pens out of 7.62 shells, and we also have 50 caliber Sharpie dry erase markers, things like that. We have different coatings for them. We have different tips and color combinations. But more importantly, what the program is all about is it's a living tribute to Chris and to the men and women of our military that use the tools of war, you know, shell casings and bullets. And we've turned them into instruments of education. And education was incredibly important to Chris, not just to his own education, but the education of his teammates, of his brother, of the people, you know, the force multiple hire that he was in Afghanistan and educating the Afghanis as much as he could. And so that's what we do with our end products. We have them for different functions. Colonel Roger Tomlin gave me the idea of making pens for mental health recipients, and so we do that on a regular basis. We give some out in 2 weeks from yesterday. We've made over 400,000 pens in the last 9 years. Or
11 years. No, 9 years. 9 years. Yeah, 9 years.
We're off the air as far as being live broadcasting right now. It does continue to record for probably about 10 or 15 minutes.
Yay, I'm proud of you.
Well, thank you. I couldn't have done it without you, without both of you.
It was heart-wrenching to ask you a few questions I already knew the answer to, because then I'm like, oh, onions.
I gotta leave. I don't know, CJ, if Alex told you that, but she was the impetus and the driving force for the audio version of The Making of Our Warrior. And we did that in November.
Yeah, you agreed to Chris. Oh, sorry. I was going to say, so Jeff would literally go to Arlington, go visit Chris, and read The Making of Our Warrior. I actually have, you posted some of the pictures, but whew, it's heart-wrenching. Heart-wrenching.
Yeah. So,
to hear him read it in his voice. Yeah.
I definitely want to have you on again one day, Jeff.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
I knew better than to listen to Alex. Alex has got this very impatient, persistent attitude that we should only do an hour. And sometimes
some of our guests don't talk. Well, we
some
actually
of our
have...
Guests, we can't get an hour out of them. And some of them we could get 4 hours out of them. So, I knew better. I should have listened to my gut.
No, but you don't. Actually, because we literally will be in traffic because we're meeting up with my buddy's buddy who's the commander of the Air Force Special Operations Command. So, like, we literally have to split now and go to Fogo de Chao.
That's what cell phones are for, Alex.
I know, but I felt so awful when you guys were like, hey, I hear you're stepping on the gas. I was like,
Jeff, let me tell you. One time we were doing a live radio show, and Alex is on the cell phone, and you can hear her flooring her Mustang. Like, literally, it's winding out.
I've experienced those Z-forces on numerous occasions.
And I'm like, texting her. Hey, why are you like driving and flooring it? I can hear the accelerator in the background of the cell phone. What are you doing?
I know you guys called me out on air. I was like, yeah.
Jeff, I definitely want to say thanks for coming on tonight, brother. And
oh, my pleasure.
Have you back on.
My pleasure.
Absolutely, definitely a great episode, and it's definitely an honor to talk about Chris. And to memorialize him. And I look forward to working with you in the future, brother.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, sorry
about
your allergies.
Yeah, I've had a rough 2 days with allergies. between looking at photos of Jeff and Chris and watching VSA videos, yeah, my allergies have been out of control.
Aww.
Well, I will
let
you guys go.
Uh-huh.
Jeff, make sure you're driving. Don't let Alex drive because literally if you are. Well,
if I drive, I'm all like, okay.
Make sure you say an extra prayer, and I'll pray for you as well if you're going to let her drive.
Absolutely. You should, definitely. All right.
All right, you guys
later.
Have a good night. Be safe.
Thanks, brother. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.